Welcome to Capital Conversations by the Venture Asset Management Initiative, produced by IMD, your go-to podcast to understanding the dynamics in venture capital. In this latest episode, we explore the craft of fund sizing and modeling with Daniel Kuiper-Noor. This conversation is split into two parts. This is part two. Daniel is co-founding partner at the VC firm Speed Invest, based in Vienna, Austria, with total assets under management exceeding 1 billion euros. With offices in Berlin, London, Munich, Paris, and Vienna, Speed Invest focuses its early stage investments in six dedicated vertical teams: deep tech, fintech, health and biotech, marketplaces and consumer, climate and industrial tech, and SaaS and infrastructure. In an era of extended private market cycles, waning IPO activity, and intensifying competition among VCs, together with Daniel, we delve into how VC fund managers can strike the delicate balance between fund size, investment strategy, and portfolio construction to maximize returns while adapting to unpredictable market dynamics. Graduation rates from one funding stage to the next signal company performance and fund quality, with faster rounds often predicting unicorn potential. A 50 to 60% graduation rate from seed to Series A is typical, with each further round reducing the number of advancing companies. This rate correlates with follow-on investments, providing critical data points for fund modeling, especially as market conditions evolve, influencing investment size, timing, and valuation expectations.
So graduation rate from one funding stage to the next is in fact an indicator of performance or quality of the company, because without showing good underlying development or promising outlook, nobody would give them for them. So there is a correlation. Also, a lot of research recently done shows the quicker a company raises rounds, the higher the probability to eventually become a unicorn. However, unicorn is a kind of a bit of a vanity term though, but as a proxy for a successful startup, the quicker a company raises the early rounds, the higher the probability of becoming a unicorn. Also for funds, a high graduation rate from the stage the fund invests to the stage that follows that fund is an indicator of the quality of the fund manager, and also serves as an indication for LPs to further support such a manager, because they might expect this fund to return the desired performance. What is a good benchmark graduation rate? Difficult to say. So typically we calculate with an 80% loss / under critical return rate. However, we see about half to 60% of the companies in our portfolio raise a Series A, which is above our internal calculations. Then from round to round, obviously the dropout quota goes down simply because the quality of the portfolio is increasing. So we see probably 50 to 60% graduation rate from C to A, and a good market average for graduation rate from A to B and respectively from B to C would also be something in the 30 to 50% rates. So for a seed fund starting out with 100 companies, 50 make it to Series A. Of these, another half goes into Series B and another half goes into Series C. That's probably something between 10 and 15 companies eventually ending up in Series C stage. Out of 100 in the beginning, a Series C stage company currently in Europe is valued somewhere in between 500 million and a billion. Typically, after dilution, a seed stage fund would probably hold something in between 5 and 10% stake in such company. Each of these is in between 25 and 50 million value in the portfolio. Having 10 such companies is a combined 500 million, which is about 2 to 3x on the initial fund size. I think generally a manager would be well advised to take as many data points and observation into his portfolio modelation, not only its own learning curve from past funds. Markets go in cycles. As we've learned, when we modeled the portfolio model for Speed Invest number 4, that was under the impression of the 2020-2021 market. So we assumed we would be probably investing in between 1.5 and 2 million in an initial ticket. eventually now halfway through, we are somewhere around 1.2 to 1.5, so considerably lower. But I'm owning the same target stake in the portfolio company. So this back then, we would have expected the market to be where the higher level. Turned out investment comes cheaper. That will, of course, build be another data point when we start modeling for Speed Invest 5. And I guess all of the good fund managers out there doing it some way similar. Obviously, you have to have an idea by, you know, expectation rate of loss ratios, of valuation multiples that a single portfolio position can achieve over time, assuming by when you will be able to exit such positions. All that comes together in the now current market environment where everything goes a bit slower. So rounds don't happen as quick as they used to in the 2000 to 2022 years. Valuations are lower, rounds happen slower. Not everything is being funded. That was also different back then. And I think the past 2 years that we've gone through, they taught the whole industry a whole lot more than the 2 to 5 years before that.
So we've learned how reserve ratios in seed funds balance initial and follow-on investments, with experience guiding a typical 50-50 split. Larger follow-ons increase risk but offer higher potential returns. We've also explored how graduation rates between funding stages reflect company quality and influence follow-on decisions, while evolving market conditions require continuous adjustment in fund modeling and strategy. In this following section, we'll delve with Daniel into the definition and impact of recycling, characterizing alpha and beta in venture capital, and learn about a key question Daniel faced when raising Speed Invest's latest seed fund. Recycling lets VCs reinvest early exit proceeds back into the portfolio, boosting returns. However, it depends on early exits, which are rare in seed stages. Industry norms against early sales need to shift to allow partial exits and improve recycling potential.
Recycling is, I think, a very important part of the model, as it actually allows you to put all your LP money into CapEx, into the portfolio, and not use it up in OpEx to running the operations. However, recycling requires one thing, and that is early exits. No exit, no recycling. You can only recycle what you have returned from portfolio holdings. There are no rules how recycling, or no laws how recycling should be made. Going standard in the market is like at any given point in time, you may recycle as much capital as you have used for OPEX by that time. So assuming you're on a 2% fee model for 10 years, that would be 20% of the LP capital would be reserved for OPEX. Say you are in year 5 and you would have had an exit that returned you the required money. So on a 100 million fund, by year 5, you would have used 10 million for OPEX. If you have an exit by then that pays you up to 10 million, you can recycle these 10 million back into the portfolio, which is basically a good thing because it allows you to put even more money on those promising companies, eventually driving returns. It's very healthy for the GP-LP relationship, I think, because the GP has the guarantee that all of his money is put into portfolio. However, a fund needs a certain basic structure and organization to function. To start saving on overly cutting budgets is, as everything, it has two sides, right? You spend less, but you can do less. So, and if you have this agreement with your LPs that they invest 100 million over the drawdown plan and you are on a 220 model, you may spend 20 million on the operations. If you happen to have the recycling clause baked into the LPA, then you can return money that you realize from portfolio exits back into the existing portfolio. Typically, once the fund is still in its investment period, that money could be used to buy additional companies. Once the fund is past its investment period, it can only be used to support existing companies. That's maybe one thing to consider. But the much bigger question to me in the context of recycling is, to actually be able to recycle, the industry needs to be able to generate early exits. And specifically for pre-seed and seed funds, this is a difficult thing. We are the ones that are in for the longest. And there is still the idea in the market that if an existing investor is selling out in a following round, that's considered a negative signal. I think this we need to discuss in the industry, because only if the industry is able to recycle, and not speaking only for the seed stage funds, every following stage fund as well, in the light of the recent trends that companies stay private for longer, on average it takes 13 to 15 years from foundation to large exit / IPO. 15 years, assuming a company raises a round every 2 years, that's 7 rounds. That's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I have not heard of too many G rounds so far. And typically, why not allow the earlier investors one round after they were forced to finish investing because it's outside their mandate, stay in for one more round, and from the round after that, they should be allowed to load off positions. Not all of it, but at least partial. I think that's something the industry really should discuss.
In venture capital, defining first checks as alpha, high risk, high return, and follow-ons as beta, lower risk, is tricky due to the lack of transparency and benchmarks in private markets. Early stage investments need high returns to justify the risk, but evaluating performance is difficult without clear data and the bias of only reporting successful funds.
So it's finally good to have this discussion of risk-adjusted returns also in private market and even more so in venture, because so far it's been something that's very, very present in discussing performance in public markets. However, as important as this discussion is, let's not forget the fundamental differences between private and public. And the difference is exactly in those two terms, private and public. In public markets, it's solely to the decision of the manager to take a position and liquidate the position. In private markets, this is simply not the case. It's always the result of a negotiation between minimum two parties, the target company, the investor. And if there is other investors in, it's a three-way negotiation. This takes out a lot of, say, options an investment manager has in the public markets, where he can do his analysis and he can decide to buy an S&P 500 company, and he can decide to sell an S&P 500 company, and he has to explain to nobody and to negotiate with nobody. And this is different in private markets. So if you discuss alpha and beta as in the alpha understood as the ability of a manager to create superior returns, and beta being the normal market risk. So normal market risk, that would require a benchmark, an index. There is no really index for private markets. There are some calculations, but it's nothing to be compared with, you know, benchmarks in public markets. Again, S&P 500, SMI, DAX, whatever take you. But this is a requirement to calculate beta, because you need to measure the performance of one investment in its swings against the broader market. So if you say alpha is the initial investment and beta is the follow-on, what would be the benchmark against your calculated beta? Is that the other rest of the portfolio where this money does not go into? Or is it the wider market? Difficult. I mean, even alpha is difficult to calculate, because you would need an index for this as well to benchmark. So is the net of 20, is that good or bad? I mean, 20% a year is not bad, but is it good enough in the light of the risk that the investor is taking? And then in private markets, there are so many, you know, buffers and filters for information. The company reports to the fund reports to the LP. Between these two events, fund company reporting to fund reporting to LP, can be months in between. The GP only reports 4 times a year to his LP. So that is out of 365 days, in a room that you sit with your GP, there are 4 days where the light is on and 360 days where the light is off. Plus those several instances, and there is no information creation and gathering from the outside. A publicly traded company, I can somewhat okay follow through, you know, mere media consumption. And if I engage a bit more, I sign up to some investment bank publicly published research. In private markets, it's not possible. So the concept of alpha and beta, difficult to apply. Obviously, one would not invest in private markets if one would not expect the highest alpha. Because why take the illiquidity risk? Why take the information risk? Then in those super tiny companies, early stage, all kinds of risks in there, alpha must be high. If not, bad investment. And then what's also in all these reports, one must not forget there's a massive winner's bias in those statistics, how funds are performed, because those funds that go out of business for not meeting the performance expectations, leading to not raising any more funds, they just quietly leave the market.
LPs now increasingly question VC firms about succession planning, reflecting a focus on long-term team stability. For evaluating GPs, LPs should inquire about both bottom-up and top-down approaches to portfolio construction to ensure consistency and clarity in fund strategy.
The most challenging question from LPs that we ever got, it's actually difficult to answer. What was, and this is again Speedinvest POV anecdotal, what was clearly new in the most recent fundraise where we have been in the market late 2020 throughout 2021 into early 2022 was that first time in all those 14 years that we've been doing this, the question about team and more specifically succession planning in the manager was the first time that that was ever part of the discussion, and it did not come from one LP, it was across the board. So in direct comparison to the previous fundraise, the very last one just before, not a single one or only a few addressed this, but this time around, every, say, large, meaningful LP, regardless if existing or new to Speedinvest, had this question on their questionnaire. And that also got ourselves to think about this topic, because of course VC is a long feedback loop investment class, and trusting someone with your money for a time frame of 10 to 15 years with practically a lockup, you want to have a clear sight and build the trust that those people who are managing now, at some point in time, they will no longer be in that role. It's natural. But you want to, as an LP, build the trust that the following, say, generation is built of the same material, or even better. And for this, I can only advise any GP, start thinking of this from day one. Because building a team that eventually then grows up and takes more responsibility, typically that is a transformation process that can take 2 to 3 fund generations, means 10 years. Hiring experienced people over from other funds is expensive. Plus, it's not a given that they fit into your culture, most important, the structure and the processes and how the team works and how the team performs. Because in the end, the output is on the bottom right of the last page. It's the DPI. And the people building the VC firm and those eventually taking over, they must be made of the same material. So that was, I wouldn't say the most challenging. It was in a way a challenging question, because it forced ourselves to really, in a structured way, think about this question. The one question an LP should ask a potential GP he considers investing in with regards to portfolio construction. Basically, there is two ways to approach portfolio construction. One is bottom-up, and if there's a bottom-up, there's always a top-down. I would ask if the GP can explain the approach to the model portfolio from both sides. And ideally, he should end up with the same portfolio construction.
In this episode, we've explored the intricate dynamics of venture capital, from the nuances of iterative portfolio construction to the evolving role of recycling and the strategic implications of risk-reward analysis. Key insights reveal the critical balance between initial and follow-on investments, the importance of team succession planning, and the need for transparent fund modeling. As the VC landscape continues to evolve, understanding these elements will be crucial for both fund managers and LPs to navigate the complexities of this space. As the emphasis on sustainability and impact investing grows, Many wonder how venture capital firms should integrate these priorities into their portfolio construction and decision-making processes, how to align them with future market demands. If you want to hear more about that or any of the topics we've discussed today, you can go to imd.org. And don't forget to subscribe for this podcast for more information. We'll see you next time.